This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM. As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And good morning, Roger, and good morning, world, as we come together for our weekly visit here on WGN Radio, the Saturday morning show, where we cover everything in the area of food production and agriculture. Because I've said it for decades, our most basic and important industry, producing food for people in this country and around the world. Well, as I mentioned earlier this morning, Jim Fazell is going to talk about some of the old wives' tales in gardening. There are some interesting ones, and sorry to report that Jim doesn't put much stock in those old wives' tales, but we let him talk about that. And then, of course, it's fair time across the country, and a lot of county fairs underway in the Midwest. And we'll be talking to my county fair, because I live in McHenry County in the town of Huntley, and just up the road at Woodstock on Tuesday, the McHenry County Fair will get underway. And we'll be talking to the president of that fair about some of its highlights. And if you're a rodeo fan, you're going to enjoy one of the features they've added this year. So a lot to do in the next hour, and we hope you'll stay with us. And Jim Fazell standing by to join us when we continue on the Saturday morning show. I think you're going to like the topic that Jim Fazell has picked for this week, because he's going to talk about old wives' tales in gardening. And boy, there are probably a ton of them, but let's find out. Good morning, Jim.
Well, good morning, Orion. You're right. There are just all kinds of things, and there's some that pop up practically every year, but I thought we need to talk about these. We did this maybe a couple of decades ago and got a lot of comments from people that said, well, I wondered about that, but there are a lot of myths. Some are true, and some are just exactly what you said. They are myths.
Well, let's start with your first one.
Okay. Well, Grandma says to get sweeter tomatoes, add sugar to the planting hole. And I've heard this a lot of times. Not my grandmother, but some grandmas talk about that. It's an old-time tale. Sorry, Grandma. Sugar isn't absorbed by the plant. Actually, the sugar goes into the planting hole, and it is broken down very quickly by soil organisms that want the energy out of it. And that releases just a little tiny bit of carbon, which we have plenty of in most of our soils. The sweetness of a tomato is determined genetically, and it's affected by the temperatures and the amount of respiration. If you have nice, warm, sunny days and cool nights, you get good, sweet tomatoes. If you have hot nights, the sugars don't accumulate in the tomato, and it's not going to be sweet. But it depends on the tomato itself. Some are just genetically sweeter than others. If you like sweet tomatoes, find one that just is sweet.
Well, Gloria's tomato crop is doing pretty well this year, so we've been enjoying those tomatoes.
Well, good. That's great. Ours are late because we had so much rain we couldn't get them in. But anyway, yeah, they're plenty of them on there. Now we're just waiting for them to ripen. And it's been cool at night now, so they ought to be pretty good. Another one that we get, and I had a fellow down the street, they cut down a tree in front of his house because it had died, and they planted a new tree for him. He was very upset because they planted it at the same depth as the other one. He says, they need to plant it deeper. Look what the old one did to my sidewalk. Well, the planting of a tree deeper is not going to affect the sidewalk. It may affect the tree because if you plant it too deep, the roots are going to die off. Eventually, if the roots don't die off, the collar of the tree is going to be affected, and you'll have collar rot, and eventually it'll kill the tree. Also, if the roots do survive, they're going to seek their own level. They're going to grow up, strangely enough, until they get at the level in the soil where they get the correct amount of oil, of air, and of moisture. So you want to plant them at the correct depth. Don't worry about what they're going to do. Plant the buttress roots above ground and don't hill any soil up on the trunk, because if you do that, you're going to increase the problems later. Another one, plant overly long tomatoes on their sides in a shallow trench. Yep, good idea. if you're growing tomatoes indoors and they get long and leggy, best thing to do when you plant them out is to plant the root at the same height that it normally would, but lay the stem down along the ground and cover it over gently, because wherever it touches the ground, it's going to make roots. That will keep the two tall plants from falling over, and it will give them even more stems so that the plants will grow even better. You don't have to worry about whether the stem's horizontal or not, because the tips will grow up. Again, don't plant them too deeply. Another one about tomatoes. Put eggshells in the planting hole for tomatoes. Maybe that might be a good idea. Eggshells actually contain calcium phosphate, and the calcium is essential to the growth of the plants. Many folks who grow tomatoes have problems with blossom end rot. Blossom end rot is caused by a lack of calcium in the tissues of the fruit itself. A little extra in the soil doesn't hurt anything. Now, the stuff needs to be finely ground when you put in there. Just don't throw the eggshells as you crack them in the ground. Grind them up as best you can, and be sure that you don't overdo it, because we do have a lot of calcium in our soil to start with. Now, this is just an additive to get the plants going all right. If you put too much in, you'll raise the pH of the soil, and then you're going to have problems with the lack of iron, lack of magnesium in the plant, and so forth. So don't overdo it. Another one, knock the tops of onions down to get bigger bulbs. I know when I was a little kid, people said, well, you need to walk down your onion patch, because that'll make it'll take the tops down and make the bulbs get bigger. Well, actually, that's not a good idea, because the tops are the sources of energy needed to develop the bulbs. As long as they're green and growing, they're photosynthesizing. They're producing the sugars and the carbohydrates that will make the bulbs bigger and sweeter. You need to protect the collar of the plant, of the bulb, and not walk these things down, because if you do that, you may have a thick neck problem on the bulb, and they will not keep as well. You're going to have storage rot problems if that's the case. You need to let the stems stay up till they turn yellow and fall down themselves, and then the onions are ready to dig. Plant marigolds next to tomatoes to prevent bug problems. Well, you know, there's a little bit of truth to that. Not so much around here, but in some parts of the country where they have root knot nematodes, like Florida and California. Planting marigolds will actually trap these nematodes, because they migrate towards the marigolds. They will trap them in the root knots, which will be less likely to occur on the plants that you're trying to protect. And actually, marigolds are magnets for mites and for earwigs. If you're going to get mites in your garden or earwigs in your garden, marigolds are the place to look for them. Now, neither one of these is particularly damaging to tomatoes, so you don't need to worry about that. But keep the marigolds in the flower garden, or use them in your border, because they're beautiful, and that's where they belong. Another one that we get, usually in the springtime, but I hear it all the time, I'm getting ready to plant next year, and I'm making my plans of what to put in. I know I need to plant peas and potatoes on Good Friday, and then I need to plant my tomatoes on the full moon in May. Well, some of this is true some years. Good Friday changes from the third week of March to after mid-April, so you need to watch the weather on that. Good Friday to plant potatoes might be planting them in frozen soil in the snow, and we don't need to do that. Because the weather does vary, you need to wait until the weather warms up a little bit, the soils get the frost goes out of the soils, and they get mellowed so that they're good for digging. And you don't want to plant the potatoes until the soils are ready to work. Now, as far as planting the tomatoes on the full moon in May, again, that can be early or late. And I know that these tomato growers around here, the old Luxembourg vegetable growers around here, always said wait till the full moon in May. There are a lot of times when that's true, because the full moon can be late in the month, and then planting after them, you have a lot less chance that there's going to be a frost. But the thing to do is to watch the dates. The frost-free date around here, average date of last frost, is about May 5th, and the latest date of last frost is around May 30th. So if you watch those dates and you plant accordingly, you're not going to have a lot of trouble. For new gardeners, instead of relying on the myths, you need to follow good gardening practices and common sense. Get the soil prepared well in a good place with plenty of organic material and good sunlight. Have access to water, and plant them properly. Fertilize when you need to, and keep the weeds under control, and you shouldn't have a lot of trouble with your garden. These myths are fun to look at, but you don't want to put a lot of stock in them.
Well, thank you for straightening us out on some of those myths, because like you, I have heard them for well, practically all of my life. So good to get the truth from our specialist in ornamental horticulture, Jim Fazell, with us on the Saturday Morning Show. We're at 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on WGN Radio Chicago. I want to take a moment to send out a good morning to the nearly 300 people who joined us yesterday at Jameson's for the David Hochberg Lecture on the Reverse Loan Program. Very interesting. And David, of course, you've heard him on WGN Radio, and he knows all of the answers, and he shared them yesterday with the people who joined us in the Drendel Ballroom at the Sun City Huntley Prairie Lodge. And I want to say thank you to all of you who came up to shake my hand and say you've been listening to me forever, and it has been forever. It'll be 57 years, the end of September, that I've been doing these programs on WGN Radio. But it was really fun getting to meet so many of you, and, of course, listening to David work on the reverse loan program and what benefits it can bring to homeowners. You've heard him talk about it, of course, on WGN Radio. But thanks to the folks at Jameson's, and thanks to all of you for coming up to say hello to Gloria and me, and tell me that you have been listening since you were a kid, but you never told me how many years ago that was. So, but thank you very much. And tell you what, we're going to talk county fairs when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Ew.
It's county fair time across the country, but the county fair in McHenry County, which is my county, is getting underway in a matter of days. And since I consider it my county fair, I'm going to talk a little bit with the president of the county fair board, Ken Bauman, who joins me here in the studio. And let's start with the dates. When does the fair start?
Our dates are July 31st through August 5th.
And people always say, what about hours? What time can we come to the grounds? What time do they shut down?
You can come on the grounds as early as 7 if you're going to see livestock shows, and most of them start around 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. And the carnival rides and the food vendors start opening up at 10.
And go how late at night?
Till 10 p.m.
What about admission and parking? They always ask that.
Parking is free. Admission is $8 for 13 and up. Seniors are $5 every day. Veterans will be $5 every day. Children 6 to 12, $5. 5 and under is free. But we are also doing a special $2 for Tuesday. If you're a Boy Scout or Girl Scout or a Scout leader, you get in for half price. That's on Wednesday. Thursday, we're honoring our first responders, our EMTs, police, fire. They get in for $4. And Saturday is our big salute to the veterans. We do a salute before our tractor pulls, and they're $4.
So let's talk about some of the highlights on the program. Something new this year?
Bull riding. And we'll have Tuff Hedeman here. If anybody's seen the movie 8 Seconds, he's going to come and sign autographs and help us promote the rodeo and do, I don't know what he's actually going to do, but I know he's coming to the fair. So
I'm sure he'll ride a bull, and he does have some kind of a big record, does he not?
Yes, he does. He's I think he's one that rode the bull called Bodacious, if I remember right. And I don't know if we'll get him to ride one, but I think he'll put on something for us. So.
And then, of course, I look at county fairs as the Super Bowl and the World Series for 4-H and FFA members. You have good livestock shows?
Yes, we do have very, very good livestock shows. Our barns are almost always full. Our superintendents who volunteer their time are scrambling to help the kids get acquainted and get going. And we have a great support in our county for 4-H. Saturday is our normal 4-H livestock auction, so if you want to know, you know, where your food comes from, that's a good place to start and help support a 4-H'er.
And what about a buyer of one of those animals at the auction? Are they processed by someone else so that once they sign the check, the meat will come back to them?
Yes. You can purchase the animal at the auction, and you can decide which processor you'd like to send it to, and then it's up to you to go pick it up and pay for it. So,
well, in the Chicago area, over the years, many fairgrounds have changed location. What about Woodstock? You're located where?
We're located at 11900 Country Club Road, and we've been there for over 70 years, so... you know, we haven't moved. It's been thought about and discussed, but we haven't moved yet. So,
well, that's why I asked, because I know quite a few fairgrounds close into the suburban area have moved, and but we'll find Woodstock. And of course, I attended that fair many times and emceed the County Fair Queen contest. Is that still going?
Yes, our queen pageant is still going. It gets bigger every year. I think this year we have around 55 girls competing, because we branched it out to a little miss and teen and junior and eventually, you know, our queen. That is Tuesday night at the fair. You know, the follow up with grandstand events Wednesday, we brought back the combine demolition derby. So that's one way for all the farmers to get rid of their old machines that are sitting in the weeds, is find a young guy that wants to smash it up. Thursday we have the next level pro bull riding. And then Friday we have two country artists, one young and up and coming, and another one that's proven themselves. We have Logan Mize and Kentucky Headhunters. And then also Friday night after the concert will be our raffle drawing. We're doing a raffle, 3,000 tickets sold. You have a chance to win a 2018 Harley Street Glide motorcycle or $15,000 cash. So, yeah, your odds are really good when you compare it to the lottery, 1 out of 3,000. So,
I would say so. And, of course, our friends at Gary Lang are sponsors of the fair, and we are grateful for their mentioning of the fair here with us. And you do have a few other sponsors?
Yes, we do. There's a lot of businesses in the county that have really stepped up and willing to support the fair, and I think that really shows, you know, our fair board, that what we've been trying to do over the past few years is really paying off, and we're more than appreciative of everybody that supports the fair. And it takes hundreds of people to put on a county fair.
County fairs would never happen without volunteers. So we thank Ken Bauman, who is the president of the McHenry County Fair Board. The fair starts in Woodstock next Tuesday, the 31st, and then continues through Sunday, the 5th of August. Ken Bauman here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Misericordia is a community of care for more than 600 children and adults with developmental disabilities located on a beautiful 31-acre campus in Chicago. Misericordia residents thrive in work opportunities in its bakery, packaging, coffee, and art departments, and on-site greenhouse in restaurant. These opportunities are also available to volunteers like you, who are the strength of Misericordia. You can help by volunteering or donating. Just visit misericordia.org.
We are a minute away from news headlines here on the Saturday Morning Show. And, of course, in addition to county fairs this time of the year, farmers markets are open in a lot of areas, including Chicago in the city. And, of course, in the suburbs here in Huntley, we have a farmers market every Saturday morning, and that will be the case again today. So get out and shake hands with a farmer and learn a little bit more about where your food is produced and how it's produced at a farmer's market near you. And of course, you can get answers to those questions as well by attending county fairs. So we hope you'll do that. And coming up in the second half of the show, one of our favorite market analysts, Dr. Michael Cordonier, who regularly visits South America, Brazil particularly, to take a look at crop conditions down there. So he'll sit down in the studio with Max and give us his impressions of crop conditions and maybe the trade industry. impasse that we've run into. Thank you very much, Roger, and we're here until 6 o'clock news time, and we'll have our weekly BASF look at crop conditions currently across the production area of the Midwest, and then we'll be talking markets with Dr. Michael Cordonnier of soybeansandcorn.com. And a lot going on this morning here on the Saturday Morning Show. And right now it's time for Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality cleaning products since 1947. Check them out, WHINK.com. And this week, we're talking about farmer reaction to the president's aid program announced last week. And surprisingly, quite a few of them are saying trade, not aid.
Microorganisms on medicine on this current cast. When we take medication, some of it gets excreted in our waste. And from there, it often ends up in water. John Kelly of Loyola University Chicago says common pharmaceuticals can harm benthic microbes, microorganisms that grow in the sediment at the bottom of rivers.
Well, the microbes are the bottom of the food web in these rivers and streams. And so if the presence of these drugs is decreasing their ability to grow, it could have significant effects on the ecosystem.
He says people can help by not taking medication unless it's truly needed, and to never flush extra pills down the toilet. Instead, look for municipal take-back programs so they can be disposed of properly. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
Well, it certainly got a lot of attention in media last week, both rural and urban. News from the White House that the president was planning to make a $12 billion aid package available to help farmers who are under economic stress. Reaction was interesting. You heard some earlier on This Week in Agribusiness from some State Farm Bureau presidents, but you also heard from members of Congress, depending on the party, for or against. But it was interesting to see the reaction, I think, in farm community, because it was on both sides of the issue. And let me quote a couple of statements that were made in response to the aid package. First of all, Lynn Rorscheib. She is the chairwoman of the Illinois Soybean Growers, and she said, if trade is our problem, aid handouts are a poor solution. As producers, we would rather be able to sell our crop for a fair price and grow both agricultural export and market opportunities. Government handouts only provide short-term relief. The effect on our soybean supply chain could be disastrous if the U.S. government continues to pick winners and losers in this trade spat. And then Kevin Skunas, president of the National Corn Growers Association, said NCGA appreciates the administration's recognition of the harm to producers caused by tariffs and trade uncertainty. We know the package won't make farmers whole, but we look forward to working with USDA on the details and implementation of this plan. Corn growers confronting their fifth consecutive year of lower prices. Some reaction to the aid program. They'd rather have trade, not aid. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. We're at 22 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And this week, Max Armstrong sat down in the studio with Dr. Michael Cordonnier. So let's listen to their conversation.
Dr. Mike Cordonnier joins us in the studio this weekend. You have been the soybean corn advisor for many years. How long have you had your business, Mike?
Oh, I've been doing this for over 40 years, so it's been a long time.
You have a lot of clients, I presume, not only in the United States, but other countries, too.
Clients around the world, a lot of governments, a lot of hedge fund folks, all the big names on Wall Street, lots of folks around the world.
Well, not only do you watch South American crops so well, you follow our crop development here, and that's one thing I wanted to talk with you about. We'll get to that in a moment, but maybe putting the cart in front of the horse just a little bit. We saw an estimate the other day that Brazil's soybean acreage could go up as much as 5% when that crop is seeded this fall, to better than 91 million acres, I think. What's your feeling about that?
Well, I have the area going up 3 to 4%. The Brazilian field, they're in the driver's seat with this trade dispute between the United States and China. So they're very anxious to get out there and take advantage of this. And it's going to be another record crop in Brazil. It makes 2 years in a row now. They're up to about 119 million tons soybean production. Next year it'll be over 120 million tons. So, and when you increase the soybean area, you automatically increase the corn area as well, because it's a double crop after the soybeans. So I think they're on line here for an increase in both corn and soybean acreage.
That would surpass the acreage of the United States in beans this year, would it not, if they put that much in?
Yes, yes. Now, the only reason they haven't surpassed us already is because we keep doing record soybean area here in the United States. But next year, Brazil will have more area than the United States.
What if, I know that's a big what if the trade dispute with China were to be resolved quickly? Is the die already cast simply because they've had those great premiums down there for the beans they've been selling?
Yeah, you know, those premiums in Brazil, they're up to about $2.50 a bushel over Chicago. So actually, prices for soybeans at the ports in Brazil and here in the United States, if we include the tariff, they're about equal, all right? So if this trade dispute is resolved, then the prices go up here in the United States, of course, for soybeans. Then I think just makes the world even better for Brazilians. So I think if the trade dispute is resolved, they will still increase the area, no doubt about it.
What are the Brazilian farmers doing with their newfound funds?
Well, unfortunately, now there's sort of in a holding pattern with this whole dispute over freight rates. There's very little forward contracting for the next crop. Last time I saw Mato Grosso, for example, 21% forward sold for the next crop. Normally it's like 35% forward sold. Everybody is waiting to see if this freight rate dispute gets resolved. So it's sort of in a holding pattern.
Here at home, as we look at the crop development, the weekly crop bulletins issued by the USDA not only have not shown us declining conditions, actually, I think beans got a little bit better in the past week, didn't they?
Both crops improved a little bit last week. Now, they have been going down for 4 weeks in a row. They improved a little bit. Cooler temperatures, rainfall. I have the U.S. corn crop at 178 bushels per acre.
178.
The USDA in their trend line is like 174.6. But last year was a record corn crop, 176.6, and we're better now than we were last year. So why wouldn't we have a better corn crop? I think the crop is set up really good. Pollination is today maybe 85%, 90%. It was very successful. If August turns out to be even close to normal weather, I think we have a good chance of another record corn crop.
We had quite a bit of heat. The heat, of course, advanced the crop dramatically during the month of June. Many of us were shaking our heads saying, have we ever seen anything quite like that month of June? But did the heat also, lingering a little longer, lingering through the nighttime hours, trim yields a little bit in some places?
Yeah, that's what you worry about with these higher temperatures. Now, high nighttime temperatures results in what they call dark respiration, which is the plant does extra effort at night to maintain its cellular structure versus filling the kernels. So anytime the nighttime temperature is over 72, 73 degrees, it's sort of a drag on the corn. Now, that's more important during grain fill, late pollination, early grain fill. So those temperatures in June were not at the critical time yet for the corn. It accelerated the growth. Now, going forwards, if we have those high nighttime temperatures in August, you could trim the yield, but this crop's got a momentum to it, and it would take a pretty dramatic bad weather scene in August to have a significant reduction.
A farmer would hasten to say, doggone it, the crop's not in the bin yet, but when we get to this stage of the corn crop and we are looking this good, it's hard to mess it up, you're saying.
Yeah, it also depends on the soil moisture. Our soil moisture now is better than the long-term average, if you take the whole country as a whole. So good soil moisture, if we have a cool August, then you really got a good chance for a big crop. So the temperatures in August will be very critical.
There are those trouble spots. That hole in western Missouri looks nasty around places like Hamilton and Chillicothe. Your farmer friend in Caldwell County, Missouri, was showing cornfields to us that, boy, it was just very bad. Parts of North Carolina, South Carolina, but those areas certainly more than offset by the good abundant yields in the big producing areas.
You know, last Monday, the three driest states were in order, Missouri, and then Arkansas, the two areas you're kind of talking about, and then Michigan. So southeast Michigan is dry as well. So we got the dryness in a certain pockets, and then we had too much rain, northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, so some drought-out spots over there. So one thing I think we'll see in the August crop report is a lower harvested area for both corn and soybeans. And that's because of the drowned-out spots in northern Iowa, southern Minnesota.
That number would come as early as the August crop report, you think?
I think so, sure, because that report is two parts. One is they actually go out in the field and look, okay. The other part is all these thousands of farmers send in how many acres they will harvest and what they think the yield is going to be. So the farmers who had drowned-out spots are going to send in a lower harvested area. So I think it will show up in the August crop report.
Soybeans. We generally assume that that month of August is a great way to finish off the bean crop. And as good as we're looking now, is it virtually assured that we're going to have a great bean crop, especially with the kind of moisture reserves we have in the soil at this point?
Well, I got the soybean crop at 51 bushels per acre. The record was 2 years ago when it was 52 bushels per acre. Now, if you go back 2 years, the third week in July, 13% of the soybeans are rated in excellent condition. As of now, it's 18% rated in excellent condition. So if we have a normal August with some rain throughout the month, I think we're on track for a good possibility of another record soybean crop.
Quite often we get a little bit of tropical moisture in the month of August. Have you looked at that historically and what that does in terms of finishing off the bean crop? I know it's a two-edged sword. Some of that gets dropped in excess in places, especially when you look at the southeast and the delta region. But conversely, there's some beneficial stuff that shoves right up into the corn belt quite often.
It's a lifesaver for the Midwest. A hurricane comes in. We don't want the damage from a hurricane, but that moisture moves north, and many times that moisture coming up in August is a lifesaver for the crops, many times.
What else are you watching here in terms of the domestic crop? Anything else on your radar screen that we should be thinking about?
Well, this whole tariff issue, I think, is so very unfortunate. You combine the tariff issue and a very big crop. Of course, you've got soybean prices collapse the last couple of months. Where they go from here is going to depend on now the tariff situation, because we know we got a pretty good crop coming on. So big crops mean lower prices, and then big crops and tariffs mean very low prices. So going forward, this is going to be this watch the market, and I'm afraid it's going to be kind of sideways, maybe up a little bit. Farmers are going to resist selling, of course, with these low prices, so that could raise the price a little bit, but we need a resolution to this tariff issue for prices to rebound.
I heard a little chatter in recent days about maybe the bottom being put into the prices, with trade news perhaps impossible for it to get worse, and the belief that we've already factored in big crops. What's the possibility of an even larger crop surprise here? Maybe not in the August report, but as we get into September.
Hey, it's possible. And look at last year. Last year, the USDA actually lowered the corn yield in the August report versus March intentions, or what it had been using. And then after that, it went up every month afterwards. So good weather in August, good rainfall, and yes, we could have a surprise to the upside on these crop productions.
Last year, producers did get some surprises during harvest when they were in the cab, pleasant surprises. So that wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility this year, you're saying?
The genetics now are so good. A little bit of dry weather just doesn't have the same impact today as it did 15, 20 years ago for the corn hybrids and the soybeans as well. So there's more of a potential for an upside surprise production-wise than a downside.
We always enjoy your visits. Come back soon.
Always my pleasure, Max.
Dr. Mike Coronier, the Soybean and Corn Advisor.
Thank you very much, Max, and thank you, Dr. Mike. We'll look forward to his next visit and probably get a closer look at the crop in South America, particularly in Brazil, where Michael does have a home, and he goes there probably a couple times a year. There's one other crop that we haven't talked about, but I'm going to talk about it for now for a minute or so, because it will affect beer drinkers. That's right, beer is an agricultural product, and the crop of hops that is a key ingredient in making beer is pretty good this year. The story this week, brewers will get a good supply of hops, a key beer ingredient, as the world hop harvest is likely to reach a reasonable size, although it will be slightly smaller than last year. Exceptionally hot dry weather has hit some crops in northern Europe, but Germany's important hop-growing regions have received enough rain, and the country should have an about-average crop, according to an analyst checking on that. Now, hops, of course, are grown in the United States in the Pacific Northwest, but I was talking to a person recently who had traveled to Upper Michigan, where they have a lot of cherry trees, and he said some of the farmers with cherry trees were taking them out and replacing the crop with hops for beer. But it looks like the U.S. crop is estimated to increase slightly from last year's 47,000 tons. Harvesting of the hops crop will start in late August, and we'll learn more when it does. Well, right now, let's learn about the current crop conditions in our weekly report that Max checks in with the folks at BASF.
This weekend, we bring you another visit with a technical service representative for BASF. And over the past 90 days or so, we've had the privilege of visiting with Vince Davis a number of times. We've tracked him down again this morning. Vince, where are you in the heart of America as we visit?
I'm close to Madison, Wisconsin this morning, Matt.
Do the crops look as good in southern and central Wisconsin as they do down through Illinois?
They absolutely do. We have a lot of really good crops out there, and we're right on the back end of those last-minute needed or the end-of-the-season needed scouting trips out there, and I've been encouraging growers to not give up yet. I think we have another week or two of important timing to get out in the field and learn what's going on, but there's a lot of good crop out there, Max.
Have we already learned some lessons from this growing season? I know we haven't made the crop yet. There are some critical days ahead, but have we seen some things that might already, even at this stage of the game, give us some guidance for 2019?
Well, I hope everybody has learned something from their fields by this point of the year that they can improve upon next year. I know, unfortunately, there are still a lot of growers learning the value of residual weed control as much as we have preached that over the last few years. Water nymph is starting to pop up above those canopies in a lot of fields, and so I know that lesson is occurring out there all too often, that's for sure.
We have seen the water hemp becoming quite troubling, haven't we?
Absolutely. It just increases every year, and we talked about it all spring long, the importance of getting Group 15 herbicides out there like Zidua or Outlook is really paying big dividends this time of the year. So that's one lesson at this point in time.
What kind of yield-robbing effect have we seen by those escapes that have managed to come through? Do we have any indication at this stage of what it might mean ultimately in the yield? I guess we can judge by prior experience, can't we?
That's a good question, Max. Every situation's a little bit different. In years past, I've done side-by-side trials, on-farm trials, looking at the value of residual control, specifically just for water hemp and I've seen water hemp take anywhere from 7 to 10, maybe 12 bushel to the acre by itself. It's the only escaped weed out there in the field. So more than enough to pay for that extra cost on the front end for residual herbicide control, that's for sure.
What evidence of disease have you seen out of the fields?
Good question, Max. We're in that last couple weeks of scouting, and on the soybean side, we are definitely starting to see Sclerotinia stemrod, or white mold as it's better known, show up in these fields. So getting out there and learning where that is, where that's going to be a problem, is important. Septoria brown spot is really starting to climb up the big canopies we have in some of these soybean fields, and that's critical to understand as well. Those are the two biggest things on my mind, but I'm certain that sudden death syndrome is going to start showing up in fields, and that's one we really can't do much about this time of year. But those first two I mentioned, white mold and Septoria brown spot, if we're still in between that R2 and R4 growth stage of soybean, we see major return on investments for getting that late season application of Preaxor fungicide out there. The Preaxor does not reduce the white mold infections in those fields, but it does really improve the compensatory yield on the plants out there in the field that don't get overcome with white mold. And we see big return on investments for those applications where growers struggle with those problems.
While we know there are some critical days ahead yet for that soybean crop, the corn crop, too, can be strengthened dramatically in these final days of maturity of that crop, can it not? And conversely, if there's a problem, you can still trim yield off the corn crop by not getting maybe the depth in those ears that you would otherwise.
You bet, Max. Corn crop has definitely advanced early. We had a lot of early heat, but in the last 7 to 10 days, it's cooled off. In nice cool nights, we got a really nice pollination and early grain fill occurring out there in fields. That's a benefit. On the flip side, it's also been perfect weather for disease development. So a lot of fields out there have absolutely exploded in gray leaf spot, and we are starting to pick up a lot more northern corn leaf blight in some fields. And so I think to take advantage of this grain filling weather we have, we're going to see major return on investments for the growers that invest in a good foliar fungicide like Headline Amp to get out there and to control those foliar diseases. Probably we're going to see benefit all the way through that milk stage this year in corn, I think, to take advantage of that fill season and to fill the ears that we set up early this year. And I hope growers don't give up. I think over the next week or two, getting fungicide applications all the way through that milk stage is going to be critical this year for yield.
Vance, we sure have enjoyed visiting with you over the past 3 months, and we've benefited from your expertise. Thanks. We appreciate it.
I appreciate being part of the show, Max, and I wish growers luck all the way through the season and a safe and bountiful harvest this year.
Vince Davis, Technical Service Representative with BASF.
And that's our time for the Saturday morning show. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for doing the engineering work for us this morning. And thanks to all of you for joining us here for our agricultural food production conversation every week.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on the Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.